The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Yvette Judge joins us from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Nice to be back.
Good to have you in the studio. Shall we get straight into it?
Okay.
Misanthropic. Ignominy. Admonish. Rapacious. Incomprehensibilities. Word for the week.
If you just tune in, you're thinking, what is going on? Each week, Yvette gives us a word that we attempt to squeeze into conversation. We wait eagerly till this time of the day each Monday to find out who did it most confidently, most naturally, pronounced it correctly, and used it in the right context. There is a lot of pride to play for in this competition. It's between Michelle and myself this week. Yvette, remind us of the word that you gave us last week and what it means.
Last week I gave you glumbucket, which was a word that was being bandied around a lot in the UK in particular with regard to the election, and it was used to describe a particular person. It's just sort of, we just get it from the sound of glumbucket. Somebody who's not happy.
Should we have a little listen to how we used it? Michelle, I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, thank you.
What are Gemma's plans for retirement, you ask? Will she cruise around the world? Nope. She will be heading home for some much-needed R&R with bestie and trainer Eddie. I love the story. Only a glam bucket wouldn't.
Right in at the end.
Yeah, I was waiting. But how is it going to get in there? But no, it did. Yeah, quite like that.
She's writing notes. Yeah, did you see that? Yeah.
No decisions to be made.
No.
Just yet.
Okay.
Here's my try.
Mutut says he was supposed to travel on a weekend jaunt, but changes in flight plans and schedules means he's staying back. He's a bit sad about it, but he's sure he'll find a good way to spend time with his family.
I'm sure you will. Don't be too much of a glum bucket.
Oh, also very, very naturally in there. It's a good word, isn't it?
It is a good word.
I think we're all going to use it a lot now. Have I got to do something
we're
now?
We're all waiting.
People have no idea of the pressure that I'm under here. And the words that are said to me beforehand and the threats and all
there
sorts.
There are no threats.
Oh my goodness, there totally are threats.
Not at all.
Steph has been preparing audio for her victory. I've been bribing.
I think because we... Well, I do love the audio. I never thought of the audio. And is that going to sway me? Maybe it will. I quite like, yeah, it was very natural from Steph, and I think she used it some time ago. She didn't leave it till the last minute. So I think I'm going to go with Steph.
And the winner is Steph Bergen.
Thank you, everybody.
I'm sure you had one of those ready if I'd pick Michelle, didn't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, can we just to listen Michelle? To that one? Because I'd like to feel a bit better.
They only had time to make one. So
I'm going to go and have a word with AJ in production.
We need a new word for next week.
Okay, I think it's difficult for next week. I like the sound of the word. It's miasma. Okay, yeah, M-I-A-S-M-A, miasma. And it's a sort of the air of general misery and depression and darkness, and so you can actually have a real miasma, which is like a sort of fog, or you can have a miasma of depression, which is just gloomy and so on.
Would it work if someone said, hi, how are you doing? Miasma.
I think you've got to have a whole sentence. I'm in a miasma of despair would work.
Oh, I'm feeling very miasma.
No.
You're a bit miasma this afternoon.
You can be in a miasma of misery.
So it's a feeling around.
Yeah,
it's a fog.
Yeah, it's the atmosphere. Oh, it's the fog. It's,
people in this room
and
are really...
It's got sort of nasty connotations. It's not. You don't want a miasma. I don't think you can have a miasma of happiness.
I was going to sit in the office, but with Tim in there, it was full of miasma.
What do you see?
Like that?
That might sort of work.
Okay, we'll work on that for next week. Miasma is the word we need to all try and squeeze into
more
our conversation.
More challenging, definitely more challenging.
I have got some fantastic book news to tell you about, Yvette. We'll see if you've heard about this. It's great. We'll do it when we come back.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Yvette Judge from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature joins us every single week with fantastic travel books, whether you're travelling on a plane, on a train, in the back of a taxi, or even if your kids are just travelling into the land of Nod. We've got a book for absolutely everything today. Now, looking at the book news, Yvette, the general election was held in the UK last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about that?
I may have heard a thing or two.
On the run-up to the election, a politics professor called Matthew Goodwin, he promised that he would eat his words if Labour won 38% of the vote. Now, they won 40% of the vote. So Matthew, a professor of politics at Rutherford College, University of Kent, he took to Twitter to admit his defeat, and he tweeted, OK, you win. I will be eating my book on Sky News at 4:30 p.m. And here he is on Sky News eating Brexit, why Britain voted to leave the European Union.
I was surprised that Jeremy Corbyn added 2 percentage points or got 2 percentage points more than I had expected. And I did say that I would eat this book, which is available at all good bookstores. 2 percentage points makes a big difference. I am a man of my word. So what I'm going to do is just sit here and eat my book while you guys carry on.
Makes you feel a bit icky, doesn't it?
It does.
The paper crunching.
Did he actually eat it?
It was the book.
Yeah, but was it like nice glossy paper, do you think? Or was it that sort of slightly yellowing paper? But I mean, I think, you know.
Recycled.
Yeah.
You were about to find out.
I wouldn't want that.
Actually, it was a big book.
It's actually a hardback. There were lots of chemicals, but I've got to get through the whole thing, so.
Yeah. I don't think you did get through the whole thing. Because he was shoving in too much. You'd never be able to swallow it.
Oh, no, no.
Anyway, we're going to do a little test, and I've brought a book of it for you.
Okay.
I'm only kidding. I wouldn't make you do that. Definitely not.
Thanks.
Let's get on with our books proper, shall we? And we're going to start. We're going to start with a podcast for the times when your hands are busy doing something else.
Indeed. Now, don't laugh, okay? Because there are a lot of people out there who knit and sew and do crafts. And I know that because whenever I put anything on Facebook or retweet anything about knitting, loads of people, I didn't know you were a knitter.
Can I ask why you started with please don't laugh?
Because I feel a lot of people will be going, what is she doing talking about a knitting podcast?
So it's coming back. Knitting is making
back
a comeback.
Absolutely. Ready, set, knit is
Shruti,
what I found.
Too young to understand that it's making a comeback. She sat there shaking her head. When you're in your 30s, you'll understand, won't she?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. I'm close to 30. I'm not there.
No, but you see,
it's very calming.
It's very calming. Mm. It's meant to be incredibly put you in a place of, you know, relaxation, chilled.
Lovely for some, you know, if you want to make someone's baby some booties.
Oh.
Or, you know, a nice little blanket to put over the knees.
Not
or
me.
A
tiny football scarf.
You should
scarf.
See some of the stuff my daughter has knitted. And she is only just 30. Yeah, she belongs to a knitting club in London.
You could put any music on you want to when you knit, or you could listen to this podcast, which could be quite inspirational, couldn't it?
Absolutely, I think so.
Here they are introducing the podcast, so we know what to expect from it.
Good morning and welcome to Ready, Set, Knit. I'm your host, Kathy Elkins, along with my husband, Steve. And on this week's show, we're excited to have a first-time guest, Leanne Presley. She is the CEO of Stitchcraft Marketing, and we're going to have a conversation about some trends and what's going on in our crazy little yarn world. So she'll be joining us in a couple of minutes. And Steve is here in studio with us with his yarn picks of the week, and we got some cool stuff. So why don't we jump in? Morning, honey.
Good morning.
Woo!
Yeah.
We survived 10 sale, we survived anniversary sale, and now bring out the Zambonis.
Yep. Kind of a big week for us personally, but yeah, it's
well, coming up.
Yeah.
I love husband and wife podcast.
Absolutely love it.
Adorable.
See, we're relaxed already.
We have to start a new segment.
That's brilliant though, isn't it?
Yarn of the week.
Yarn of the week.
I think that's fantastic.
And that's a pun. Yarn of the week as in story of the week and yarn as in knitting yarn.
You know what? I was upstairs before and I thought, this isn't going to be very good because Shruti was laughing and then she was going, how much do I have to listen to? Do you regret what you said now?
No.
You into it now, aren't you?
No, Steve
you are.
Is extremely boring.
Oh, no. No, not Steve. I just love the background music. I thought it was beautifully produced. You know, they have a studio.
It was upbeat. Fancy. It was upbeat. I remember when I first met my husband, we got into cross-stitch together.
See?
Mm. So romantic.
It was. We'd sit and we'd go in a cafe and we'd sit and we'd work on a project together, like all afternoon, not really talking, but working on the project.
Yeah.
Relaxes you.
I reckon he really liked you and thought, oh, I've got to do
I think
this.
So.
What am I going to do?
No, because when I met him, he was already doing his cross stitch and then I jumped on the bandwagon.
Oh, so you
was,
really liked him. So you
yeah.
were going to do this
cross. Oh, get off the cross stitch. Took myself off to start where I bought the stuff. It was quite an investment. And the other day I went to the friend's house that I cross-stitched for, and normally it's in her downstairs bathroom, and it wasn't there.
So she just takes it out when you come over, and this time she forgot.
Yeah, I think so. I felt like asking for it back, terrible. To be honest. I'd spent so much time on that thing. I can say that because she's left now.
See, I've still got the cross stitch on my wall that my sister did for us when we got married. And whenever I can't remember, which is quite frequently, what year we got married in, I just run upstairs. Like, oh, yeah, it was 1982.
Yeah. When was the last time we all did a bit of knitting?
Oh, quite recently. I'm doing a green cardigan at the moment.
Oh,
what kind of green cardigan?
I've never been able to knit, but I did do the cross stitching. And I remember there was an elderly group in our town, and I used to go and join them and... Yeah, it was lovely. Some of them had magnifying glasses and...
That's sweet.
Thanks.
I like that it is something you could do your whole life.
Yeah.
If you're into it. If it's a hobby that you really enjoy, then you can do it all the way through. You said you're making a green cardigan. Tell me more.
So, interestingly, they mentioned on the podcast I was listening to about Rowan Yarns, and it is a Rowan yarn, which is UK yarn, and they're beautiful, beautiful colours. And,
so it's very high-tech.
I bought the whole thing in Liberty when I was in London last year, and I'm a bit slow on it, I have to admit, but I'll get there eventually.
Pick it up every now and then.
Every now and then.
I remember when I was a kid, we'd go to the local shops, and there was a wool shop.
Yeah.
And it would be a regular stop-off to get wool. Buttons, and it was a great shop. It was magical. You walk in and all those little balls of wool, all different colours, it just instantly makes you want to be creative. And I learnt to knit.
Yeah.
The whole pearl and cross stitch and
plain.
Not cross stitch, plain.
No, plain and pearl. Yeah.
Plain and pearl.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I think we need to start a segment because I had no idea what you just said there.
Well, if you'd like to get into knitting, that might be a good place to start with a podcast called Ready, Set, Knit, Husband and Wife Team.
Love it.
Moving on to our next book, you might not be travelling very far tonight. You might only be travelling into the kitchen, in fact. So you've got a book for that.
Indeed. And on my... I've got a lot of vegetarian and semi-vegetarian books recently. This is another one. So thank you to my friend James Mullen for recommending this one. The Happy Pair. Recipes and stories from two guys, David and Stephen Flynn. They're twins. They're from Greystones in Ireland. And they own a health food shop called The Happy Pear Cafe. And
that's a great name.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Happy Pear, P-E-A-R, as in the fruit. Mm. But obviously it works both ways because there's twins and there's two of them.
Oh, I've just realised that, of course.
Yeah, it's clever, isn't it? Very clever. A lot of puns this week. Yeah, and it's a beautiful book. They've got a really interesting story. They were not vegetarians for their whole lives, that's for sure. They grew up in Ireland, so they ate whatever they were given. I'm guessing there were lots of potatoes, though. Sorry. And eventually, they moved on from that and decided that they wanted to do a detox to be healthy. They were going to do the Dublin City Marathon. And on the back of that, they totally reformed their eating habits.
It's going that way, you know. Mm. There's a new vegetarian cookbook every week from cool people as well.
Yeah.
Let's have a little listen to David and Stephen Flynn talking about their brand new cookbook.
We've always wanted to do a cookbook, but we've never had the time to put it together properly. Until late last year, we worked at a deal with Penguin to do our first Happy Pair cookbook. We were super, super excited. It's been a real treat working with Penguin, one of the biggest publishers in the English language. And really, really fortunately, we ended up having the same art director overseeing the Happy Pair cookbook that does all of Jamie Oliver's books. So that was so lucky. Yeah. That was really, the book looks fantastic, as you'd imagine. We started out with more than 250 recipes, and all our bakers and chefs and everyone had an input into what the recipes were. We whittle it down to 100 of our absolute favourite recipes. We've got lots of mains, soups, salads, desserts, and breakfasts. We also felt that we wanted more in the book besides recipes. So we've lots about why we do what we do, about stories, why we started it,
about community,
health, community, and lots of stories about the adventures we've had so far. And then we've lots of bits about, you know, practical tips of how to eat really healthy food. It's a book about food, but it's also a book about persistence, about following your dreams and doing what you love to do. Mostly, the book is about veg. It's about eating more veg. And all the recipes are helped to support you and inspire you in eating more veg and eating healthier food.
Oh, I like the way he said that. You made veg manly.
He does. That's what he says they aim to do. They aim to make it interesting. And apparently, I was reading only today, that most of us sometimes do not even achieve one fruit a day, let alone our...
You heard that five. On the air and you sent it, didn't
did
you?
Did I? Good grief. I could well have done, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a new story today. Yeah. We should be having up to five or something.
Yeah.
No. Do you know the big thing now is in England, because that was the whole campaign, five a day.
Yeah.
They actually have now discovered that it's 10 a day,
no,
but
they
didn't want to frighten people. So they're like, we'll tell them five and that's enough for now until they get used to it. But yeah, it's meant to be 10 a day.
I can't eat 10, but I can't eat that.
But you could if you were vegetarian.
Yes, when there was no other choice.
Yeah, that's the thing. I went home last night and I've got on a bit of a thing at the minute that I'm cooking meals. So I've got leftovers for the following night and all vegetarian stuff. But I got dragged into a recipe that I thought, I'll have this done in half an hour and in the oven. 2 hours.
No.
2 hours. It didn't really come out like I thought.
Anything in this book takes that long, actually.
That's good to know.
Because
you don't want that, do you? You want to be in there for half an hour, 40 minutes
maximum.
Especially if you're working all day.
Yeah.
So that one is called The Happy Pair Cookbook by David and Stephen Flynn. It's a fantastic suggestion, and we're going to have more books for you when we come back. We're going to have one for the plane if you are actually travelling somewhere. The train, of course, the back of a taxi, and a great bath book, which also doubles up as a book for the kids this week.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
And a vet judge very kindly helps us do it. Lots and lots of travel books every single week for you to pick up. And lots of bestsellers, lots of newbies, some cookbooks, one for the bath. Also if you're travelling by plane. But Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, what is going on behind the scenes?
Ooh, well, it should be a quiet time of year. Everybody thinks that we sort of sit with our feet up, twiddling our thumbs.
Knitting.
Not doing
reading.
Knitting. Bit of knitting. Lots of reading. However, the programming team in particular are incredibly busy because we're sending out all the invitations to 2018 and, more excitingly, getting the replies. Mm. We've already got 90 authors who are confirmed for next year.
Well, it's good, but has anyone come back who you really wanted and said, no, I can't do it?
All the time.
Really?
Yeah, which is not all the time, actually. But we always try inviting people like, you know, J.K. Rowling.
Who, yes.
That's just in case.
That's what I was going to say. Do you have, like, the ultimate wish list? Where they're like, okay, let's think of...
Yeah. Not believe who is on that list. And I'm not going to divulge, but she certainly is. Yeah. And you've mentioned Game of Thrones when you're talking about the sort of what you're watching and everything. Again, George R.R. Martin is not allowed to do anything until he's finished his next book.
Ooh.
And his publishers have been saying that for years, and he's still not finished it.
Is it a little bit like a wedding where you invite a lot of people hoping that 20% of them won't come?
Yeah.
What do you do if they all say yes?
Extend the festival.
Because it was longer last year. Is that what happened last year?
A little bit. I think we decided actually to make it longer, to make it more spread out and give people less difficult decisions to make. But there is always that, oh no, they're all saying yes. Yay!
How do you contact them? Is it like all this like really cool, like through their agent?
Yeah, normally through the publisher. The publisher always needs to know because we need to make sure the books are there. So publisher, agent, themselves directly through the website. We're not proud.
Like jkrowling at gmail.com or something.
No. Twitter. You could definitely tweet her.
Oh, all the time.
Maybe we could start a campaign to get her here on Twitter.
Yes. Hashtag JK.
That works, you know.
JK in Dubai.
Mm. Yeah. Dubai wants you, JK.
Or Rowling in Dubai.
Why?
Rowling. Because her last name is...
Okay, let's work on that. We'll work on that. We could do that with everyone who's listening right now. That is 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 4 of us. There's 6 of them. That's at least
10
tweets that could go out. Maybe they're not all on Twitter. If everyone could get a Twitter account who's listening right now and tweet JK Rowling, that would be fantastic. In the meantime, let's get back to our books. We have a great book for the plane, don't we, this week?
Well, I think so. Now, who doesn't love a diamond? So, I have got Koh-i-Noor.
Yvette's very excited about diamonds.
I thought there was another word coming, like thief.
No.
Who doesn't like a good horror novel?
Yeah. Diamond. I like sparkly things. William Dalrymple, who's a respected historian, and Anita Anand, who works in the UK a lot and does radio stuff, moderator, journalist, have combined forces to write a book on Koh-i-Noor, the story of the world's most infamous diamond. Now, have you ever been to see the crown jewels?
Yep.
Have you ever viewed them? Yeah.
I have, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, there's lots of blood.
I've seen them, but they're just jewellery, aren't they?
Well, they are. But apparently, the Koh-i-Noor is in the state crown of Queen Mary. Now, when that arrived in the UK in Victorian times, it was so uninspiring and boring.
That
was at the Great Exhibition. Everybody thought it was just a little bit of glass. So Prince Albert had it recut to make it sparkle and had, I think it's 32 facets cut into it to make it into an even better diamond. Can you imagine doing that? You're given this thing that's worth, even in those days, hundreds of thousands of pounds, and somebody says, oh, can you make this look better?
Oh, and your hand's not shaking doing it as well.
Yeah. Wow. But there's lots of stories associated with the Kohinoor.
Well, authors William and Anita did actually speak to an Indian news station and discuss some of the myths that are busted in this book surrounding the diamond.
I think most people here have the view that it was, you know, the stone was an Indian stone that was taken by the British in 1849, end of story. Hmm. Actually, it went all over the place. It went to Iran, it went to Afghanistan, it came in and out of the country. And also, all the ancient history that is normally given for the Kohinoor turns out to be pretty well fiction. Hmm. This one first, that it was the Mughals' greatest gem. Right. Not true.
The fact that it always looks the way it does, and it has always been the same size, it's actually half the size of what it was originally, because the British cut it and there was a catastrophic mistake in the cutting, which reduced it in size.
Yeah, and people here, I think, generally believe that the Kohinoor is the biggest diamond in the world. And in fact, last year it was the 90th diamond, and there's been several big finds in South Africa this year, so it may well pop below 100 on the world diamond rank.
Sounds like that bloke in the UK did not do a very good job with the cutting.
Can you imagine? Oh my goodness. Mind you, it's still quite nice.
Yeah, it's
somebody,
lovely.
Somebody had it. Well, I wouldn't wear it in a crown because I think that's quite uncomfortable. But somebody had it made into a brooch or a pendant for me. I'd wear it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You'd take it out for a while. I do like when you see old jewellery thinking about the people that have worn it before.
Oh yeah. And I mean, whatever myths they're busting about it, it does have a fantastic story behind it. And all the people who've owned it, and so
does it keep your grip though?
It's great.
This book,
it does, and it shouldn't do because it's just about a diamond. But in fact, one of the people who reviewed it said a book must be good if it makes me buy tickets to revisit the Tower of London, an expensive family day out that I've been putting off for decades. So once you've read the book, and it did make me think, next time I'm in London, I'm actually going to go back and have another look at it. So I do think that's a measure of a good book. It makes you want to do something, follow up afterwards. So Kohinoor.
We should reclassify that as a book for the plane on the way to London.
I think so.
Don't
it's
we?
Very specific.
Yeah. It's a good one, though. And you can find all of our books today on DubaiEye1038.com on the ticket blog. Schutz is hard at work putting them up there right now. So don't worry if you haven't got a pen and pencil with you. Next book we're going to go to is a book for the train. If you're on the metro tonight going home from work, what should you be reading?
This is a brand new one for the train. It's Mark Billingham, who's been to the festival many times. He's from my home city of Birmingham, so what's not to love? And he writes crime stories. And his hero is D.I. Tom Thorne, but he's introduced a new character, Nicola Tanner. And in this latest book, she has something pretty awful that happens to her partner at the start of the book, and it's really about how she wants vengeance on that particular twist.
Oh, I like a good revenge book.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've got the usual serial killer and so on. So you've got Tom Thorne and Nicola Tanner.
You said this was a new one. Is this one that everyone's going to be talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's already, it only came out last week. I think it's already in the bestseller list.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
This is a good tip.
It's a good one.
These are my kind of books.
Excellent.
Schutz, just tell me what we've got for this clip-wise, because he's a comedian as well, isn't he?
Yeah, so he was on this American talk show, and they do something called The Great Complaints. And it's just, you know, he's talking about someone who's complaining about the things he writes about.
In the book.
In the book.
In terms of complaints, I get a little bit wound up by people who write to me complaining about the bad language in my books. It's like they pick one of these books up and they go, oh, murder, I love all that stuff. Oh, he chops up 18 people. Oh, swearing, heavens no. It's completely bonkers. Here's one email I got. Dear Mr. Billingham, why do you spoil your books by using the F word? Any writer who sees fit to use the F word three times in two pages is in serious need of a dictionary. Now, I wouldn't normally have responded and just have ignored it, but he'd spelt dictionary wrong. D-I-C-T-I-O-N-R-Y. Dictionary! So I wrote back, and dear sir, terribly sorry you didn't enjoy the book, and perhaps if you'd stuck with it, you'd have seen that the use of the word was justified. And maybe, on reflection, you're the one that needs to use the dictionary. That way you'd know how to spell dictionary. He wrote back again. This time he was the one that was swearing. It didn't go well after that. That was the complaints department. My name's Mark Billingham.
How do you feel about swearing in books? I think if it's justified, I don't mind at all.
I mean, I think if it's there and it's what people would actually have said, then it's fine. If it's there just for the sake of it, then no.
If you're reading that kind of book, you're going to be a certain age anyway, aren't you?
It's It's not a children's book.
No.
You know, it's, it's...
You can't really have it censored in a book, you know what I mean? You can't have a blank, you know, in the book, you know, no under 18 book. Or...
Is there censorship in books?
Actually, no.
Wow.
Not really. Only self-censorship by the author.
Yeah.
So, whatever they want to...
I know sometimes they do different books for adults and children. I know, yes. Like Ashley Vance, who was at the Literature Festival, he did his book on Elon Musk, and there was the adult version available as well as the...
Yeah.
He'd done it a little bit differently, hadn't he?
That's right.
For
and
children.
And you're changing the language, you're changing what you say in terms of maybe simplifying it a little bit. But... No, I think an author, you know, if it's what the character would have said and you've built that up, then that's absolutely fine.
We're going to be back with more books. If you've read any of the books that Yvette has ever suggested, do let us know.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
I do get my authors mixed up quite a lot.
Sometimes quite dramatically.
So Yvette Judge from the Emirates Island Festival of Literature joins us every week to talk about books regarding travel, whether it be travelling down the street in the back of a taxi or by travelling by train or a plane even. But we are going to do a taxi one, and it's difficult with the taxi book, isn't it?
Always, because if you can't read well in when you're travelling, get motion sickness, it's not the thing to do.
Get someone to read it to you.
Exactly.
But not the driver.
But not the driver.
So not him, okay.
Or you can plug yourself some earpods in and listen to it, which is what I've chosen this week. So Val McDermott writes a lot of crime novels, but this is more of a thriller. And it's called Resistance, and it's a dramatised story, so it's not just a straightforward narration of the book. I think it was a Radio 4 production. It's 2 hours 30 minutes, which actually is not too bad, and depending on traffic, that could just be a couple of taxi journeys, couldn't it?
You're especially right, the traffic to Sharjah. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's set in a music festival, 150,000 people on a farm in northeastern England. Zoe Meadows is the journalist, and she's reporting on it. And then suddenly people start getting sick, and it's blamed on food poisoning from a food truck, which is run by Sam and Lisa. But it's not ordinary food poisoning, ...
Should we have a little taster?
Yeah.
Remarkably, emus are also susceptible to it.
So how is it passed on?
Well, it can be contracted by people coming into contact with infected animals, animal products or animal wastes.
But in a sense, it's academic now, isn't it? Because the disease seems to have burnt itself out.
Oh, no. We were mistaken about that. It's not disappeared. It's mutated again. Instead of people showing symptoms right away, we believe the disease lies dormant in their system for up to 7 days. They don't show any symptoms, but they're still infectious.
But we all thought...
And it does seem to be much more infectious than before.
I'm instantly thinking Black Mirror.
Black Mirror?
Yeah.
What's that? I don't know that.
Oh, it's a TV show about things that could happen in the future that are a bit weird. Sounds a little bit like that.
Yeah, a little bit creepy. You don't quite know what's going on. But it's great. And because it's dramatised, and I say I'm not read, it really is a good listen, and it's definitely engrossing. And the lead role is played by Gina McKee.
It's called Resistance. Where did you find it, Yvette?
I found it on my usual podcast store. Yeah, iTunes or... It's a goodie. So that's one definitely to get you gripped in the back of the taxi when you're maybe sitting in a very long traffic queue on Cheshire Road.
Now, I don't know if you've broken rules with this next one. You've merged two categories together. Why?
Well, because I came across the book in its adult format first, and then discovered that they'd also published it at the same time as a children's book. And I just thought that was such a nice little combination. So I think I'd chosen this as my bath time read, but I think it's also a brilliant one for children to read themselves or to be read to them. And it's called Finding Gobi.
Or you could read it to the children in the bath.
In the bath, absolutely. You could. There's a lot of combinations there, I think. Now, there was a book a while ago which you may have come across called A Street Cat Named Bob, James Bowen.
Oh, yeah. I saw that the street cat, she went to the film premiere.
Exactly.
And Kate, Princess Kate, met him.
See, what's not to love? And that is another example where they also brought out a younger version, version for younger readers.
Great idea.
It is a good idea. And there's another book called A Long Way Home, which was released as a film called Lion. Sally Brierley was the author. And again, they've done a younger reader's version of that. So it seems to be a bit of a trend, particularly with anything relating to animals, although Lion's not necessarily an animal story, just the title of the film. So I quite like the way they'd done this. And Finding Gobi by Dion Leonard. So basically, it's the story of an ultramarathon runner who comes across a stray dog while competing in a 155-mile race across the Gobi Desert.
I remember doing this story on air.
Yes, I remember this story. Yeah, he was just kind of running along and then this dog appeared.
The dog appeared.
Running beside him. And he never went.
No, never went. And it's just, it's nice. It's a lovely, lovely story. And I can see why they've adapted it for younger readers too.
Gorgeous story. Dion was actually on a UK TV show speaking to Eamon Holmes and Ruth Langford about it.
This is such an incredible story. So there you were, Dion. You do ultra marathons. So you're in the Gobi Desert setting up for this ultra marathon. And then this little one appears. Tell us when you first saw her.
So I'm running a 155-mile race. It's a 6-stage, 7-day race across the Gobi Desert. Gobi decides to start running with me on day 2 of the race. And
she just appears in your camp.
She just appeared the night before. She'd actually ran with some runners the previous day. And I saw her the night before around the campsite and I thought to myself, she's a pretty smart dog. She's getting lots of food off all the runners. And I thought, there's
and they don't like giving their food away, do they?
Exactly. You have to carry all of your food with you. So.
But this is a desert where water's more important. And she's only got little tiny legs.
Yeah.
And you're going a long way.
Yeah, survival was, you know, one of the key things for us as humans, but then for her, we all sort of chipped in to help her. But she took a real liking to me, and the bond was formed.
And you didn't feel at any stage, say, go away, dog, go away, stop, leave me alone, stop running after me.
Yeah, when she started kind of running with you, did you think, well, she'll trail off in a minute and go away?
Yeah, we didn't know whose dog it was, you know, it was a stray dog, just arrived. And for her to have this connection with me that's just come from nothing, I didn't encourage her to join the race with me as such. And then we finished day 2 together and the bond was formed.
I mean, I want to read this book. I'm guessing there's tons of pictures.
Yeah, there are some great pictures, certainly at the end of the children's one. It's brilliant. And I actually quite like the children's one because it gives you a little bit of the dog's point of view as well.
Oh.
So you've got the dog's thoughts in there.
A little paws, really hot in the sand. Oh. Yeah.
So it's just lovely. Adorable.
And I think sometimes you just need a feel-good book, and which is what Bob the Street Cat one was, and this one is just the same.
I'm so glad there was someone there to take her home.
I know.
Bet she has a brilliant life now.
I think so. I mean, it was traumatic getting her back to the UK. She, you know, things like her pet passport was in Chinese and so on. And so there was, you know, the last minute hitch, I think, when she arrived at Heathrow and so on. But it's a lovely story.
Imagine what her dog pals could say if they could see her now. That when she just started running off and they're like, where are you going? I'm just going to run with these guys, you fool. New life. Rags to riches. I love it. So we're going to end today on a travel book.
Yeah, now I have had an eclectic mix of things today.
Now,
my travel book is One Man and a Mule. Got a whole animal theme, really, towards the end here, by Hugh Thompson. And again, it's slightly quirky. So we've got One Man and a Mule, which is sort of taking the a little passageway across the UK, one man and his mule, exactly as it says. And there's precedence for this. Robert Louis Stevenson crossed the Cevennes in France with his donkey. So it's in that tradition of great travellers and great explorers who just sort of set out and decide they're going to walk somewhere and take the pack horse with them.
I have a stupid question. Is a mule a donkey or a horse?
Isn't it a mixture of both?
Isn't it
a cross? I think it might be a cross.
So a bit bigger than a donkey, bit smaller than a horse.
Yeah.
And he sets off with it, just on adventures.
Yep, cross the Lake District, really. And it's lots of fascinating facts. I mean, did you know that mules are better suited to mountain tracks than horses are because they have a narrower, daintier tread?
I did not know that.
You do now. There you go.
But I would think it's more difficult when you get into town to find cafes where you can eat with the mule.
Why you say that? But I don't even notice that. The whole trend now to welcome pets into cafes, hotels,
mules?
And everything. I don't know. It'd be pushing it, wouldn't it?
It's a bit big. Knocking over all the tables as he gets to the counter. Sorry about this. Watch out, my mule's coming through. Well, we've actually got a bit from Hugh Thompson and Benedict Allen with their trusty mule, Washington, as they traverse the ancient mountain tracks of Peru for a BBC Radio 4 documentary.
So we got our mules, and now we've got to load them, which is quite an art, because it takes a long time balancing them up.
It certainly does. Mules being mules
will not want to cooperate, yes. At least. So, in fact, it can take an entire morning, because what's going to happen is they'll load the mules up, and then they'll realise the loads aren't quite balancing, and then they have to take all the loads off.
And then, once it's all done, we're all ready, we'll suddenly realise we've left something absolutely vital, like a carrot, that the mules might want, right in the middle of the baggage.
We're loading up the mule. It's like a man. Start of the trip. This is Washington, our mule, who we're going to be travelling with, who looks kind of resigned to the fact he's going to be travelling for many days with us carrying heavy loads.
Yeah, I think he just winked at me. Is that a good sign?
We shall find out.
That was Washington there. So people do travel with mules. But I can't help but think, I met a girl who was cycling around the islands of Scotland last time I was there, and she's jumping on ferries with a bike and stuff. Be great to do with a mule, but are they allowed to do general things?
I mean, what he obviously does is he finds different mules in different countries. So he's got one there that was in Peru, the one he's talking about in the book. He found it in an RSPCA sanctuary.
Oh!
I know, and again, you've got a beautiful picture of the mule. So I'm torn between Gobi the dog and the mule in this book, really.
Not me. If he brought the mule back, yes.
Okay.
But no, Gobi came back.
Okay.
It's a bigger bond.
This is true. Yeah.
Fantastic books, Yvette. As we always say, you can find them on our blog, dubaii1038.com. Just look for The Ticket. Shruti has put them all on there, so you can find all of the books we've talked about today. And we will see you next week, Yvette.
Brilliant.
Have a fantastic week.
Bye. See you later. The Radio Book Club.